Welcome to Five Star Radio. Consider this your warning.
Hey there, cats and kittens. My name is Mike Coughlin. This is Five Star Drunk as Shit Radio and HalfGuarded.com. And we're about to take the dogs on a walk for 25 minutes as we discuss and recap everything that just happened at UFC Fight Night Japan. So the first thing we have to say is, Sam, Mickey, do you want to go for a walk? Oh, and then they run around like, ooh, we can't wait to go for a walk. Yeah. Other websites try to be professional, and yet, even if they're professional, they don't give a fucking insight that we do. So which leads you to believe the ask question, I should say. It doesn't really beg the question, because begging the question is an actual philosophical term, but it leads one to the question of, if these people, sober, who don't really give a shit, are charging you so much money to give you bullshit fucking, well, you know, I really like this guy because I had lunch with him once. So it's really good, even though with somebody paid Tito Ortiz $300,000 I just fell over to fight in a fucking show that got 800,000 viewers. Oh, yeah, I'm totally fucking unbiased. You know what I charge you? Nothing. You know why? Because I can't. If I could charge you more, I would. But I can't. Anyway, dogs, go free. Wait, where's the light? Ah, there's the light. All right. We're going to walk around the neighborhood here. Any other neighborhood in the world, this would be dangerous. But I live in the suburbs of Chicago, which means I'm safe. Because it's white. Racist, but true. And we just watched the single most racist culture perhaps on Earth, Japan. I'm not joking about that one. Host UFC Fight Night 75, Josh Barnett versus Roy Nelson is the main event. It was a 5-round fuck-a-fest, and it wasn't very great. I mean, it wasn't bad. It was a fine fight, but at no point did either guy come anywhere close to doing anything at all approximating a finish. If there was anything on the whole night that surprised you from that fight, it was that Roy Nelson decided, fuck it, I'm going to try some takedowns. And he was successful with them. Wow. But he didn't do anything with it. And part of that, I think, is because Nelson comes from that grappling background. I don't think Roy Nelson is used to being on top. I believe that everyone knows he can pound and shit like that. And he's got a big right hand. And so he does not train enough grounding and pounding while on top. He's on top of Josh Barnett for way more of this fight than was expected. And yet he tried to play grappling man. Advance your position. Do this. Blah, 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 blah. And it didn't work. You know why? Josh Barnett, to his credit, found the one exploitable weakness in Josh Barnett as far as how these two matched up. And that was in the clinch. He got in the clinch and he worked well in there. He didn't get the takedowns, but he didn't take any damage off the bottom. Standing up, he's able to move more. He got a solid, as they say, workman-like victory. Which is translation for it. It's kind of boring and shitty. I mean, it wasn't terrible. It's like, it was 25 minutes of your life, and when it was over, you're like, okay. Like, you don't hate yourself for watching it. This isn't Tim Sylvia versus insert anyone ever. It was just a fight. Just two dudes going at it, humping each other, trying to put their erect penises inside of one another's butthole cavities without success. And Josh Barnett got the win that he needed. I think he's now 2-1 in his recent UFC stint. I don't know who he faces next. He lost to Travis Brown. Beat Frank Mir. Maybe the winner of Dos Santos and Overeem? Not a bad fight, although you would in theory think that the winner of that matches up well as a title contender. But Andre Arlovsky's right there also. Him and Arlovsky wouldn't be bad as an eliminator. You know, there's enough fights to be made. I know there's been some talk of Arlovsky and Mir going at it. Once again, I really have to piss. There's a really good chance that this is going to be, I don't know if it's a five-star radio exclusive or first, but I may piss in the middle of the public on the thoroughfare as it is or as it was. What? If the fucking dog can do it, why can't I? Am I better than a dog? Oh, you think I am? Then you are a speciesist. You hate animals and you hate vegans and vegetarians. You're as bad as Hitler. Worse, because he was a vegetarian. Huh. Suck my balls. So, basically, Josh has, I would say, one at a minimum, if not two fights against name-ish guys to fight before he can get to a title shot. Thankfully, the UFC has decided, hey, let's just do Cain Velasquez and Fabricio Verdun, because let's just do Velasquez again and again and again. Like, honestly, fuck Cain Velasquez. Seriously. How many times do you need to let this fucking dickbag fight for a fucking title? Every 24 months? Even if he wins, I don't give a fuck if he's the best fighter in the world. No, the best fighter in the world to me is a guy that can do it and stay healthy. If he can't stay healthy, then fuck him. Give me a guy that can stay healthy. Verdum seems to be able to stay healthy. Almost everybody else seems to be able to stay healthy. This fuckface fucking piece of shit. I don't want to use any actual racist slurs against him because I don't think it really matters. Like his Mexican heritage just caused him to be perpetually injured so much as, you know, his style of training and everything. But we could pretend, you know, he's taco-loving bastard. I'm tired of it. Have him fight someone else. Have him fight Roy Nelson. Have him fight, you know, I was going to say Verdun. Have him fight Josh Barnett. And then let Arlovsky fight Verdun. I don't give a fuck. I'm just tired of seeing Cain Velasquez fight over and over and fucking over for a title. Fuck. He's like the Frankie Edgar of heavyweights. He's going to be in every title shot there was for like 5 years. And even if they're all justified, I don't give a fuck. And the surprising win of the semi main event, Uriah Hall knocked the fuck out of Gegard Mousasi. When I say he knocked the fuck out of him, I don't think that Mousasi will be fucking anytime soon. Refer to our previous column on the website about how the greatest generation led to the worst generation because they wouldn't fuck. It was basically Mousasi controlling and winning in the first round, and then in the second round, pretty much immediately, Uriah Hall landed some spinning-ass back kick with his foot, or I should say his heel, going right, I'm going to take a piss right now while my dog shits, with his heel going right into the face of Gegard Mousasi. And after that happened, he then ran forward and landed a knee that went right into the face of Gegard Mousasi. It was an incredible... Okay, the dog finished pooping before I finished peeing. Now it's a crime. Damn it, dog. I'm still pissing. Oh, that feels good. And then he pounced on him and pounded on him and blah, 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 blah. So, yes, Uriah Hall defeated Gegard Mousasi, not just winning, but winning via flashy shit. Look, he won the fight. He won the fight conclusively, decisively. Not like I walk away going, holy shit, this guy's the real deal. But he's, again, he shows those glimpses of the talent that Hall possesses where you go, oh my gosh, this guy could really, truly be something if he puts it together. Because Gegard Mousasi is top 5, top 10, middleweight, and Hall, in about 30 seconds, made him look like a joke. I'm honestly trying to think of who he faces next. You've got the top 4 guys all booked up with Rockhold versus Weidman. You have Yoel Romero taking on Jacare D'Souza. There's some rumors. Everybody seems to be fighting Michael Bisping lately. Anderson says he's fighting Bisping. Machida may have said that. But you basically, you know what? They won't do it because of the politics involved. First of all, fuck Anderson Silva cheating. Fuck. But I don't give a fuck if they cheat. Him and Machida is a big deal. Uriah Hall and Michael Bisping. I think if you're Bisping, you want a bigger name. And Machida or Silva is definitely that name. That's the name that if you get the win, you get to fight for the world title. And it's just it. If you beat Anderson Silva, you get to fight for the world title. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. So Hall versus Machida actually really intrigues me. I could see that being a really fun, exciting, well, when I say exciting, I mean not exciting fight, but a fight. And sometimes having a fight is a good thing because it beats not having a fight, right? No? Fuck you. Just fuck your ass. You people don't know what I'm doing. You don't know what I'm... You know what I've been through, Lou? Kyoji Horiguchi beat Chico Camus. Basically an evenish fight, except for Horiguchi was just better. Full disclosure, as I wrote, and I say now, Chico Camus trains Duke Rufus, trained under Daniel Vanderlei. Daniel Vanderlei was my first jiu-jitsu coach, and more than that, he's actually a very, very, very close personal friend. In addition to being a friend, he's also a client of mine, so I'm predisposed towards possibly having a bias. So when I tell you that Horiguchi won, he won. He was just better. I was hoping for KMS. I wanted him to do better. I wanted him to have the win and the fast paced shit and all that blah, 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 blah. But he didn't. Takeya Mizugaki got the workmanlike decision over George Roop. Diego Brandão overwhelmed Kikuno. The Pride, I'm sorry, UFC Road to Japan final between Hirota and Ishihara ended in a draw, which was fair, actually. I don't give a fuck who these guys are. I don't know. First round, one dude dropped the other guy multiple times. But the guy that got dropped is actually a better fighter. And as the fight wore on, he was taking control. And it really was a fight where it's like, holy shit, this dude who won the first round big isn't as good as the other guy who got dropped. Uh-oh, he's got a physical weakness. Should we punish a physical weakness as it concerns us deciding who should be the UFC Road to Japan champion? And I say to you all here and now, the UFC Road to Japan champion is a very, very prestigious title. My goodness, such luminaries as have held that belt. So yes. Come on, you fucking dogs. Yep, I know. On the undercard, Keita Nakamura beat Li Jingyang. That was actually a very good fight. Nakamura won the first round, and then Li came on, did very, very well with his hands in the second. Third round, out of nowhere, Nakamura just said, fuck this shit, watch this. And he took his back and immediately got the rear naked choke. The rest of the undercard, it was the equivalent of balls. Oh, those are definitely balls. Definitely, definitely balls. I mean, you had German Nick Hein beating Kasuya. You had, a dude beat somebody because his finger got hurt. It wasn't anything special. So yeah, UFC Japan, it wasn't a bad show. I mean, it really wasn't. But it wasn't a great show either. It was, as the kids would say, a show. So I thank you for listening to this. We are now going to transition to Mailbag. Mailbag was recorded earlier today, before all this. I thought I could do two shows. Wait, how much have I done on this show? I feel like 20 minutes minimum. Ooh, I'm only at 16. That's not enough for a show. So yeah, we'll combine them into one nice podcast. After this, you'll hear probably something from It's Always Sunny, where it's like, fuck. And then, me, in a more sober state, but not totally sober, answering mailbag questions. Yes, that's right. It is an idea that is revolutionary. It is one that no one has ever thought of. So yeah, enjoy that shit. I think I tell you all that we'll be back in a few days, and we will, because UFC Houston's coming soon. Can you believe it? Daniel Cormier is going to fight. Ooh, we better go to that show. Can you believe that people are actually going to this show? Like, it's like really important to see Daniel Cormier and Alexander Gustafsson fight. Are you fucking out of your mind? I mean, it's a good show. Good semi-main event. I actually like the idea of Tyron Woodley and Johnny Hendricks going at it. It's a good show top to bottom, but do not fucking tell me that Alexander Gustafsson and Daniel Cormier is something that you go out of your way to see. That's like, oh, I live in this town, I'll go see it. Not, oh, I will fly thousands of miles so I can be here to watch it. The only reason you do that is because you have a lot of Vaseline left over. And you have a thing for black dudes. Or maybe, you know, Swedish dudes. And as someone who's Norwegian, I say fuck you because we don't like the Swedes. Even though the exact same fucking people, they really fucking are. Ooh, there's 6 million there and 5 million there. Ooh, and they're all homogeneous. And they've made a system of government work, and we'll pretend like that could work for any other society. Even though every other country in the world has a multicultural society, where they have different views and attitudes towards everything from how government funding works and blah, 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 blah. What I'm trying to say is, fuck you, Alexander Gustafsson. John Jones is coming back. And before he comes back, Daniel Cormier is going to show you what it's like to get a Louisiana ass whooping. What? I don't even know what that means. I don't give a fuck. I'm not really patriotic about this shit. This could be a hell of a fight. I gotta do some research on it. You'll see a podcast on that in a couple days. Thursday will be your big UFC 197,000 preview. I think it's actually 192. Whatever. I don't give a shit. Cormier versus Gustafsson for the UFC. Oh, I just tripped and fell. For the UFC Light Heavyweight Championship of this world. Not all the world. There are worlds out there where they may not be champion. But this world, they're the champion of. So, we'll be previewing that. We'll be doing shows before that. We'll be doing columns before that. You know why? Because halfguarded.com is better than every other fucking piece of shit website there is. Because we do good shit here. So enjoy the mailbag that comes up next. And if you don't, you're a loser. I hope you enjoyed the random rundown of a show that you didn't watch. And if you didn't, that's your fault. So we take this now brief commercial break. And then we come right back because that's this 5-star radio at halfguarded.com. Hey there, cats and kittens. I'm Mike Coughlin. This is 5-Star Radio. This is halfguarded.com. Oh my gosh, what a time to be alive. We are doing mailbag questions, actually. I have legitimate questions from people who have written and said, Mike, can you answer my question? Now, usually the problem is I just write back because I'm an idiot and I don't always think in terms of, hey, how can I maximize the value of this? But to maximize the monetary value of things, I should do a show, thereby increasing the odds that somebody might click. Now, I don't have names for all these questions because most of these are from either Twitter handles or people I'm not sure if they want me to give their name out. Or it's just somebody asked me a question and I forgot who it was. You know what to expect by now. So yes, we're going to talk about this. I'm recording this as I wait for fucking UFC in Japan to start. Oh, sucks. So it'll be up on Sunday after UFC Japan. I anticipate probably having a show recapping that one also. So fuck knows when that's going to air. Although I also intend to drink very, very heavily during the show. So I don't know what it's going to be. Now then, the questions, the first question, the first question I was asked is, could I give the story or talk about the Hicks and Gracie Yoji Andro fight? Now, you may be wondering to yourself, you're not at all, but you might be if you looked at the records and you go, hey, these two never fought each other. There's no record of this on the Sherdog database. Josh Gross never talked about this as being real. What's the story? So here's the story. And I'm pretty sure this is all true. Hicks and Gracie had a reputation. And I think this was pre his fighting in the Japan Valley Judo Tournament. If not pre, it was right around that time. But it's just about the time the MMA was kind of starting around the world. So we'll say, you know, early 90s-ish. UFC was starting up soon. Pancrase, the shoot style. The Akira Maeda kind of led the revolution in Japan. Was just beginning to kind of, like I say, come into bloom around the world. Now there's a dog up ahead of us, and there's no way in shit that we are going that way. Because I am not dealing with these two idiots fucking around with the dog. So, the Gracie name, even before the UFC, but the Gracie name had this cachet, this bit of celebrity to it. And it was kind of like this underground deal or people kind of knew, and in Japan, of course, they're a lot more receptive to shit than in America. The great irony being that stereotypically we associate so many of the traditional martial arts as coming from Japan. They kind of do. And yet, here in America, where we're not obviously Japanese, if you haven't noticed, I'll never forget Pearl Harbor. I'll never forget where my grandfather's sperm was that day. 7 years from creating my father. Now then, so Yoji Andro had a shoot background. What that really means, I don't totally know. It's Japan. They kind of had that weird deal where I have a feeling that a lot of the stories about great guys being these great shooters in the gym warriors and all this stuff, was a lot of the veterans beating the shit out of the quote-unquote young boys. But Andro probably thought in his head, fuck, I can make my name. The Six of Gracie dude's got this name. He's got this reputation. So what he did is he went and challenged. He flew to America on his own and challenged Six of Gracie to a fight. And a real fight. True. No holds barred. Anything goes. No cameras. No nothing. Just, I'm going to fight you. And I guess he shows up to the gym and Hicks is not there. And the story goes, Andro is causing a scene. He may have been, and I think this, I want to say this is
I think there's at least two of these. I feel like one happened on a beach in Brazil, one happened in a gym in America. So I'm probably mixing up my stories, but I don't give a shit. The gist of it's the same. That he comes there and he shows up to the gym and Hickson's not there. And he starts kind of pushing and bullying people. And I don't know if he's beating the shit out of Hickson's students or whatever. But the story goes that Hickson got word of this and somebody's driving him to the gym and he's literally taping his fists in the car on the way to confront Yoji Anjo. Which is kind of a badass thing to do. I'm not going to lie. I've never been in a situation where somebody's like, Mike, somebody insulted you. And I thought, get me my fucking hand wraps. We're going to go. We're going to fucking do this, man. I should wrap my hands in the car as I'm on my way to beat the shit out of someone. That would be a pretty badass feeling. You know, I've wrapped a knee or and shit like that before I practice. Not quite as tough. Plus, I was sitting in a locker room next to a, 65-year-old naked man. So, Hickson shows up, and Yoji Anjo gets a living shit beat out of him. From what I understand, again, it was not Hickson just taping him down and tapping. It was one of those, oh yeah, time to be taught a lesson deals. Hickson took him down and just pounded on him. He just did what he did. He knew things that Anjo didn't, because that's life. And he really beat the shit out of Yoji Anjo. And I'm pretty sure it hurt Anjo's reputation in Japan, because, first of all, he looked like a bully. Secondly, you got the shit beat out of him. Like, you want to go challenge a dude at his gym? Well, best case scenario is you win, but you look like a bully. But at least you win. The last thing you do is you walk into another man's house, slap him, and then he beats the shit out of you. It's like, whoa. You're like the evil heel from every bad 80s movie. So, that's basically the gist of what it is. This may have had, there's a lot of stories like this over the years. The Gracie family kind of embellishes some of them. But for the most part, the Gracies, they were almost like, they were workers. They were almost pro wrestlers, but for real. They'd go around Brazil and have this anyone can challenge this deal. And I think sometimes they put up money and fight people from the crowd. And they always knew they were going to win. And, and then the family split and the Elio Gracie side kind of did their thing. The Carlson Gracie side did their thing. And so on and so forth. But, the Gracies are very similar, I would say, to kind of Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison did not invent the light bulb. Or really electricity. Okay, first of all, nobody invented electricity. It's kind of come out. Now, Nikola Tesla is behind most of the shit. All AC/DC current, all that stuff. That was Nikola Tesla. But Tesla was not a businessman. He didn't understand. He was just a scientist. Good on him, he's doing scientists these things. Which you would expect a scientist to do, because they're scientists. Edison was also a scientist, and I'm sure a lot of the shit Edison invented, or is credited with inventing, he actually did invent, don't get me wrong. But he's kind of like the Gracies. The Gracies took aspects of judo that they learned, and they refined it. They absolutely deserve credit for a lot of that. But what they also were tremendous businessmen. They knew how to market their shit. They marketed it all throughout Brazil. And when they came to the United States in 1993 and started the UFC with Horry and Gracie and all them, it was not an accident. They knew how to do this stuff. And it was still legitimate. They had real fighters. It's not like Hoist was facing jokes. In hindsight, they're jokes. But Gerard Gordeau and Ken Shamrock and some of those guys, they were legitimate. They were the fighters of the day, because there were no fighters. Nobody knew what the fuck was going on. And Hoist really did win his fights. And from all accounts, the only thing that they ever fixed at all was they wanted to have Hoist face a boxer in the first fight. They thought it was important to show that their style could beat boxing because of the perception within America of boxing being king. Which makes sense. I understand that. But otherwise, it was all random draws and again, he fought Ken Shamrock, who was, you look at his record around that time when he was facing Rutan and Funaki and Jason DeLucia and all these guys over in Pancrase. Yes, it was rudimentary, but again, we're talking the beginnings of the sport. He was a legitimate guy. So, I mean, you know, that's things like the Gracies really believed in their shit, but they knew how to market it. They had a product that was good, and they marketed the shit out of it. To this day, I mean, no other martial art. There is not a single martial art on earth, I guess with the exception of maybe Jeet Kune Do, where you go, that's Bruce Lee's thing. It's not even like it's really a practice thing. But there's no other martial art on earth that is associated with a name like Jiu-Jitsu. You have no idea who founded Judo and Karate and all this stuff. Yeah, I mean, obviously, a lot of that stuff's been around forever. But you know Jiu-Jitsu, and people will say Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, people will say Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. The Gracie name is the single most dominant name in all of martial arts in the world. And a lot of it is because of shit like, you know, taking on guys and beating the shit out of Yoji Anjo and going to the UFC and doing what they did and supposedly taking on all comers and things of that nature. So that is a long-winded explanation of Hicks and Gracie beating the shit out of a glorified Japanese pro wrestler and feeling good about himself. Hey, I don't blame the guy. If I had the chance, I mean, if like, I don't know, some guy in the WWE wanted to leave his career and try out and fight in the UFC, and I was a good fighter, I might want to fight him. Yes. Oops. Not quite that bad. But not that Yoji Anjo is at the level of a CM Punk or anything like that, but it probably would be almost like, I mean, again, it would never happen today because we all know, but if just somebody from WWE, I don't know, take it during the 90s. Imagine if Mark Merrill, people thought Mark Merrill had I think an amateur boxing record and shit like that. Imagine like Mark Merrill just said, fuck it, and showed up at some Gracie gym and challenged everybody and then got the shit beat out of him. Yoji Anjo is probably a bigger star than Mark Merrill, but again, yeah, it's kind of basically what happened. Next question. Can I talk? Oh my gosh, I'd be giving the reporters question. Talk about the fact, and this is kind of news. I don't know if this clip is new, old, what, but it's been getting a lot of play lately. It shows a 16-year-old girl taking on Sarah McMahon. Yes, that Sarah McMahon, UFC former title challenger, silver medalist in wrestling and all this stuff in a grappling match. And the kid, who's, again, another female, taps her out in 45 seconds. And to say she tapped her out in 45 seconds is actually a bit of a misnomer because they basically spent, I would say, 10 seconds, no joke, actually engaged with one another before the submission happened. Somebody said knee bar. It looked more like a heel hook. And that's just how it is. And I mean, it's big news and kind of talk about it. And I will say that shit like that happens. Ryan Hall, who's all in the Ultimate Fighter, is known as a leg lock guy. Now, he's got a true, totally well-rounded jiu-jitsu game, but he's a leg lock guy. There's a couple of other guys. I'm seeing this more from the Americans, which is not a surprise. I think just the American mindset when it comes to martial arts compared to the Brazilians and such is going to be more open-minded because we don't have any national pride behind it. It's not like, we're going to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. No, we're going to do whatever wins. Especially the amateur wrestling background where it's just win the fucking match. I don't care if it's boring. You're not there to entertain. You are there to win. Now, if you could dominate a man and beat him down and pin him, great. But your goal is to win. And winning is more entertaining than anything. And you see this in other areas of life, too. I mean, Jose Mourinho and the manager of the English soccer football team, Chelsea, you know, is criticized sometimes for being boring. And all he says is, I win. Nothing is more exciting. And basically, nothing's more exciting than winning. And to be honest, if you're in there, that's true. I think that most real competitors would rather win boring than lose exciting. Now, if you're going to lose, yes, you'd rather lose exciting than lose boring. But if you're going to win, and you'd probably rather win exciting, but what you really want to do is win dominantly. Yeah, you know, you want to go out there and tap out Sarah McMahon in 10 seconds. And it happened. How does it happen? Some of that is simply that McMahon is, I mean, she's not a pure grappler. She's moved. Okay, she is actually a pure grappler, just in a different grappling art. And she's trained so much MMA. And MMA grappling and positioning, the approach is just different than pure grappling. Pure grapplers often will do better because, you know, that's all they do. The sports of grappling, submission grappling and MMA are different enough. Particularly, I would say, on bottom. On top, it's somewhat the same. You're going to be in most of the same positions. In MMA, you can get away with not advancing as much. You could be a little more stagnant. But on the bottom, in submission grappling, you can put yourself in weird positions. Or not weird, but positions that you wouldn't put yourself in with MMA because you would get punched. And that's all there is to it. And you can dive on legs, which in MMA, you know, it's not always the best strategy because we've seen it. You have to control one leg, and you're basically using both your legs, your hips, and your hands to control that one leg. That's how you get the submission. You're torquing that one leg completely. And the problem is you do the same thing with basically every submission, like an armbar, is two legs, hips, and hands on the armbar. But, you can do an armbar one-handed. Also, you're at least taking away one of their striking tools. In MMA, you grab onto a leg, they can still punch you. And so some of the, what we call 50-50 guard, which is basically looks like they're lesbian scissoring each other for sex. It's true, it's what it looks like. In MMA, I've only seen it a couple times. Sometimes it works. If you're a great leg lock guy, you can get away with it because leg locks aren't trained. But I've also seen somebody defend it, sit up, and just pound the shit and finish somebody from that position with elbows. So as far as how this chick caught Sarah McMahon, it's, one, anybody can get caught at any time. Two, we don't know anything about this girl. At least I don't. She may be 16, and she may have been on the mat every day of her life for 10 years. There's some really good, I mean, I rolled with this kid once he was 18. He just turned 18. And first of all, don't worry, your hero won. I dominated him. Partially because I was bigger. But he talked about he'd been doing it for about 5 or 6 years. I was like, holy shit. Like, when I was 18, UFC was on TV. It was on, I don't think it was on cable TV. I think UFC, when I was 18, that would have been, 2001. So that was just when the UFC got back onto TV. So part of my 18th, my teenage years, UFC was not on TV. It was not on cable. It was not a cable. It was not on pay-per-view. And I don't think DirecTV even existed then. Yeah. So it's crazy. And also, it's a leg lock game. Leg locks are a totally different style of jiu-jitsu. We see guys and we accept that some guys are really great from the half guard, really great from the butterfly guard. And every area of jiu-jitsu, every basically, I'll say position, has a specialty to it. And most guys at the highest level can beat the shit out of you with everything. But they generally tend to have something that they're very, very good at. And you'll see guys who are just great guard passers. There's some people known for just their ability to pass the guard. And there's some guys who, I mean, most of them have a good guard, period. But there are guys like Lucas Leite, if you ever look him up. I love the guy. I've talked about him ad nauseum on the show. He is a half-guard guy, and that's all he does almost in major tournaments. He uses the half-guard as well as anybody in the world, and he's outstanding at it. It's coming, and he can still make it work. That's impressive. And obviously, there's Eddie Bravo with his rubber guard and things like that. And so people become specialists, and there are guys who are leg lock specialists. And it's the one thing that people don't practice. I would imagine it is easily the least drilled, least practiced aspect of grappling is leg locks. Now, some of that is the belief that leg locks are dangerous to practice. And they are. I think that they are a little more dangerous than anything else because sometimes you don't always know if it's in until it hurts. And by the time it hurts, you've been hurt. Sometimes you're just in physical pain, but sometimes you can get injured. Like, you can lock up my elbow with an armbar, and you can just hold it, and basically, literally with just a tiny little bit of movement, pull down on the wrist, push up on the hips, tap or not, no tap, tap or no tap. There'll be times you go for like just like a basic straight ankle, Achilles tendon lock or whatever. And the only way to get it is basically to cause enough pain to the guy who goes, fuck this, I don't want to do it. And heel hooks and stuff like that can not always feel like there's nothing wrong, particularly if your adrenaline is going or whatnot. And so guys get injured easier with them. But I would say that a lot of it's just, it wasn't part of the foundations of what most jiu-jitsu practitioners in the world started learning. And because of that, they don't teach it. They're not familiar with it. They're not good at it. And they shouldn't teach it. If you're not good at it, if you don't know it, don't teach it. But because they don't know it, there's somewhat of a movement to discredit it. It's sometimes seen as almost cheating or cheap. And I say this myself. I have that mentality too sometimes. I was rolling with this kid the other day. And like right away I just caught him like two submissions right in a row. And I can see him get visibly frustrated. And immediately after that he just starts going for legs. And to me that's always a sign of a guy who's like, oh, I'm getting beat, but I gotta get the win. Now the truth is I should learn better leg locks. And I'm actually further ahead than a lot of my peers when it comes to leg locks just because my devotion to MMA. So at least I kind of know what's going on. But I think a lot of jiu-jitsu guys, particularly, you know, as they come up, look at leg locks as, like I say, it's almost, I want to say, it's almost dishonorable. And even though everybody kind of trains it, they don't really, really train it. And so because of that, there becomes this opening, this weakness. And wrestlers, for whatever reason, historically seem to be susceptible to it. And I think it's probably because wrestlers learn traditional jiu-jitsu defense. Whereas, at least submission grapplers learn some basic, position defense for leg locks. But because the wrestlers who come into submission grappling generally come in for MMA purposes, Sam, come here. One dog. Because that's their end goal, that's their vision, is you don't need to train it. Because, one, it's not something you encounter a lot in MMA. And you've only got so much time in life. You can only do so many things in life. You can only train so much in life. It's like training spinning techniques and things like that. If you're good at it, if you've started doing it at a young age or whatever, it can be effective if you know how to do it. But if you're starting from scratch and you're 22 years old and you want to fight within the next 2 years, you've got to just do what is available, what's the most likely scenario. And it's far more likely that someone's going to jab at you or someone's going to try to do a takedown off a single leg than it is that somebody's going to, do a cartwheel kick. That's why sometimes this fancy shit lands. And a lot of times it doesn't because, one, guys doing it don't always know what they're doing. Two, it's something that can be kind of time-consuming in real time. And leg locks are the same way. It's like, yes, there will be guys in MMA that will go for leg locks. But there are, as we've seen over the years, there's very few of them that are specialists in leg locks. Obviously, Husamal Paul Harris being probably the most famous leg lock specialist, him and Dean Lister. Beyond that, Marcin Held goes for leg locks a lot. And then maybe you can say Josh Barnett. But leg locks, because they're not really something you have to worry about from most guys, beyond the level that you yourself would probably know them, which is, I know how to do a heel hook, I understand the mechanics of it. And so because that's the case, you're better off, and I would advise anybody training also, you're better off learning how to keep your base so you don't get swept when you're inside someone's guard. You're better off learning subtle, slow passes, how to get the half guard in control and keep half guard and open up so you can strike. You're better off learning to defend arm bars and triangles because those things are going to happen. And if you've only got so much time with grappling, learn to become very good at the 90% of the things you're going to face and hope that the other 10% of shit doesn't happen. Because the number of people are going to do that 10% are so rare. And that probably is a lot of the reason why this chick caught Sarah McMahon. A lot of times, I've seen, lower level guys can catch higher level belts or practitioners with leg locks just because of time. if all you ever do in life is drill a heel hook, you face a black belt who doesn't really do those because they're prohibited in most major jiu-jitsu tournaments, you might catch them. And it's simply a result of knowledge. It's kind of neat. It kind of proves that there's no... I mean, there is athleticism involved in any of this stuff at a certain level. And I'm sure that this teenager that did that is likely a prodigy of some sort. I don't think she's just your average schmuck off the street. Nonetheless, it shows that why did she win? She knew something that somebody else didn't. No, not like Sarah McMahon's never heard of a fucking heel hook, but obviously the way that it was done and the full range of that technique was beyond Sarah McMahon's knowledge at that time. And so if anything, it just shows that, you know, knowledge is power. Thanks, NBC. The more you know. And therefore, that's why that happened. I actually have more questions, but I have dogs that need to be fed. And I've been keeping 25 minutes or so for a show these days, especially when I do the walkabouts. You know, we have big previews coming up for the next UFC. That'll be in studio and all that shit. But, yeah. So, thanks for listening. We'll be back very, very shortly if we haven't already been back. I don't know when anything's airing. If I've already done UFC Japan recap, then... fuck it, you're still going to get another show soon. Why? Because I'm Mike Coughlin. And I talk a lot. And if I'm going to walk the dogs, I'm sure shit not going to do it alone. I'm going to want you along for the ride. Would you? Come here. Come here, you dumb bastard. That's how you talk to doggies. So until that time comes, when we meet again shortly, I say to one and all, good fight. Good night. How do I end it? Oh, yeah. Au revoir. Mes amis.
I was a five-star man before the internet, and I'm damn sure a five-star man now, okay? I just gotta drop the dead weight so I can shine.